Welcome to this week's episode of Double A Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
So it's up to the close today, January 5th. The first week of the year is in the books now, Sam.
Yeah, that's right. Started off a clean slate, 4 days in this trading week. We'll see, I guess, what markets have in store.
Yeah, why don't we just get right in there? And it was kind of a pretty volatile week, I'd say. I won't front run you on what's going on in the week, but it wasn't a good start to the year for the stock market.
Yeah. So kicking it off with that stock market, that's down 1.5% week to date, month to date, quarter to date, year to date for the S&P 500. Looking at it within the underlying sectors here, we had five sectors now in the green for the week. Leading the way is healthcare, up over 2%, utilities up 1.8%. Energy, we haven't heard this in a while, but that was up 1%. And then financials and consumer staples up under 1%, but still positive there. Moving to the flip side of the picture there, we got technology as the big loser here on the week, down over 4%, followed by consumer discretionary, down about 3.5% for the start of 2024 here. And just because it's the start, let's take a look at the Russell 1000 versus 2000. The large caps via the 1000 index is down 1.7%, and the small caps via the Russell 2000 down 3.6% on the start for 2024. Flipping it over to the Russell 1000 growth versus value, growth down 2.8%, so definitely weaker than value, although value still starting out this year with a negative handle, down about 0.5% so far on this early start to year. Moving it over to fixed income land, we're starting the year out higher, as you alluded to there, Jeff, with yields. On the two-year note, it's at a yield of 4.39, up 14 basis points over last Friday's year-end close. And the 10-year note at 4.05, up 17 basis points, also up in yield, also up 17 basis points higher in yield is the bond. It's closing this week here with a yield of 4.2%. So it looks like, at least on those three parts of the curve, they're all over 4, which is a little bit different than where we ended 2023, where the 10-year treasury yield was at 3.88. And if you missed it last week, that's the exact same, pretty much the exact same yield. On the round to where it ended 2022 as well. So what that meant for the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, that was down about 1% on the week to date to start the year here. Clean sweep across the various sectors of the fixed income market that we look at, with the best performer being bank loans. That's down about 15 basis points or so in that cohort as well. For the below investment grade credit is the next best performer, I guess you can call on a relative basis, with high yield down about 90 basis points or so. Leading the way down in terms of the charge for the negative start to the year is the emerging market debt market, with the sovereign debt market down over 2%. IG corporate credit here in the U.S. down about 1.8%. So as you mentioned here, a tough start to the year for the traditional assets of the financial market. But with that, turning over to commodities here, commodities playing that role as a diversifier, I guess you can call it up. It's up 10 basis points so far for, as measured by the Bloomberg Commodity Index here. So just a little bit above positive. I'll take that as a win for that commodity sector with the positive 10 basis points. And looking over at some of the key constituents that we look at here, the front month WTI crude oil futures is priced just under $74 a barrel of WTI at, I guess I'll give some precision there, at $73.92. That's up on a price basis over 3% to start this year. On the flip side, gold front month futures are down 1%, still above 2000, with a price per troy ounce of $2,000.52. Looking at across the commodity complex, it looks like pretty much we've got energy up about 5% for the week to date so far. That's a big reversal here in terms of percentage. It's about the nat gas front month futures. The price there is up about 15% to start this year here. I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with this kind of cold front that we've had, not only here on the West Coast, but pretty much across over to the East Coast as well. The other positive performer there is livestock, up about 2%. On the flip side, we've got industrial metals down 3% for the week, and eggs down 2%, and precious metals down about 1.5% there. So that's a wrap up for the first week of the market. We did get some pretty interesting economic data prints this week. So Jeff, do you want to kick us off on that?
Yeah, as you said, Sam, it was a busy week this week on the macro front. On Wednesday, even though it was a short week, right? So we didn't market was closed on Monday, so it was a short week. But on Wednesday, we did get the ISM manufacturing numbers for December. They came at 74.4. That was a up 0.3 versus the estimate, and up 0.7 versus last month's print. That's a small increase there. Still contractionary though. We now have seen 14 consecutive monthly prints below 50. So the manufacturing sector there still continues to struggle. We also got the JOLTS job openings numbers that came in at 8.79 million. It was expected to be 8.82 million. So a little bit, I guess, let's say that's better than expected. So lower job openings. They also decreased a lot. It was also below the previous month's numbers. And last month, the numbers were revised higher. So we still are above the lows from March of 2021. But still kind of trending in the right direction, or the direction that the Fed would like to see. We also saw the quits rate drop to 2.2%. That's the lowest since September of 2020. It's starting to feel a little bit of a cool down there in the jobs market. And then finally on Wednesday, we did see the FOMC meeting minutes. We'll kind of talk a little bit about one of the more important things about the quantitative tightening and the Fed's balance sheet later on. But the market really took it in. Took the message from the Fed meeting minutes that the Fed was talking about rate cuts, but not really imminently, and that kind of dropped the probability of the March rate cut. It's actually down right now to about 6%. A January rate cut's down to about 6%. Actually, March is down to 65%, where it was around 90 or so percent earlier in the week. So really, that Fed meeting minutes kind of confirmed that the Fed's going to talk about cuts, but the kind of pushed out the time frame of the first rate cut there. On Thursday, we got the jobless claims numbers. Initial claims came at 202,000. Continuing claims came in at 1.855 million, kind of right in line with expectations and right in line with where they were the previous month. So they're kind of steady as she goes there. And then this morning was the big day. Was Pizza Friday. We got the change in the non-farm payroll number. That was expected to be 175,000, came in much higher than expected at 216. So an increase there versus expectations of 41,000. It's a kind of a 3-month high. The bears out there will tell you that they revised the previous 2 months lower by, I think, 71,000. So it's not a rip roaring jobs market, but it's still pretty solid there, kind of in line with what the Fed, or I would say this number doesn't really push the Fed either one way, towards more hikes or the other way of needing to cut rates faster, kind of gives the Fed steady as she goes. The unemployment rate dropped or came in line with previous month, below expectations, though it was expected to rise to 3.8, came in at 3.7. Labor force participation rate actually fell a lot from, it was expected to rise from, or was expected to stay steady at 62.8, and actually fell to 62.5. So pretty big drop there. Usually that number, we see a move by 0.1% or so every month. So a pretty big move there from the household survey. And the underemployment rate held steady at 7.1%. And then finally, we also got the services data. It came in at 7 o'clock this morning here on the Pacific, on the West Coast. The ISM services number came out. It was expected to be 52.5, actually came in at 50.6. So well below expectations there. Still expansionary. Looks like we're above 50 for 12 consecutive months. If you remember last January, we did get, or last December, we did get a number below 50, kind of a little bit of an aberration there. So it has been above 60 for those 12 consecutive months. But it's really seen that services side continuing to be expansionary, not a booming number, but still an okay number there. And again, kind of almost with what the Fed would want, not too hot, not too cold, kind of where people are seeing the economy overall, kind of a so-called Goldilocks economy out there. And I think that's it for that is it for the macro side of things, Sam.
Yeah, we did get a Question submitted for the topic of the week too, Jeff. It's from long-term listener. We've received a few submissions from this individual here, but we refer to that individual as Sailor Mermaid, based on the email. There's actually a zero R after their or, so I'm not sure what that is, but we'll just refer to a Sailor Mermaid for now. But they email us and ask, or first they say, hi, D-Line MMM team, happy new year. May I ask what your thoughts are on the Treasury basis trade and recent secured overnight funding rate spikes are about? Are those two related? Do you expect any funding pressure this year and any more SOFR spikes? So a little bit of, I guess, in thinking about the answer here, rather than just pulling out a crystal ball, we're, as usual here for the topic of the week, we'll provide some insight into how we would think about it, some of the tools that we would look, some of the economic data points or market data points that we might use to in thinking about these types of questions. But to kind of kick it off here, Jeff, I know you did pull out a few of the episodes here that we have gone through as topic of the weeks that might be relevant in thinking about Sailor Mermaid's question. But do you want to kick us off and let us know which type of episodes that people should put on the radar in terms of thinking about it and also providing some context and background for our discussion today?
Yeah, let's go with let's go reverse chronological orders and start with the most recent episode 132 on September 8th of last year. And in that episode, we actually talked about, and it was in light of the Treasury refunding quarterly refunding needs, and actually whether that was and that is an indicator of funding stress and SOFR, and whether, one of the things we talked about, Sam, in that episode was, can we really rely on SOFR being a good indicator of funding stress because it is secured, so we wouldn't expect it to move very much. And when you get into the kind of what actually happened over the, kind of over the last month or so, we'll see what kind of levels or what kind of differences we get in SOFR spreads and whether they are actually indicative of funding stress. Also on episode 112, we did on April 21st of 2023, or actually I think it was Eric. Oh no, it was you, Sam. Sam and I, we did talk about the Fed's overnight reverse repo facility. We're going to talk about that a little bit later here in the topic of the week. So those of you that kind of need a refresher on how that worked, episode 112 is the way to go there. Also, we're going to talk about quantitative tightening. Talked about that a long time ago there, episode 64 from May 6th of 2022, and also on episode 58 on March 25th of 2022. Then we also talked about interest on excess reserves way back episode 21, so at the very beginning there, June 25th of 2021, and then reverse repos overall, episode 18 from June 4th of 2021. And one of the things when we were kind of looking at articles and trying to figure out what was going on here over the past few weeks, I came across this Bloomberg article, and it was talking about the Fed's reverse repo facility. They call it RRP for short. And the idea that users have been pulling money from there to generate higher yields on T-bills or whatever else might be out there. And as that facility goes towards zero, they would expect that volatility in the repo market would expect it to heat up, that there'd be much more volatility in the repo market. And whether that would be reflected in the SOFR rate, which the Bloomberg article said, quote, spiked to a record last week. So it'll be interesting to see, Sam, when you detail the numbers, what that actually spike actually was, and whether these type of spikes would become more common. And I think that maybe Sailor Mermaid read this article and was like, what did Jeff and Sam think about this? Is this actually going to be the case? And Sam, why don't you talk about what actually happened in SOFR over the past couple of weeks, and what constitutes a spike, an all-time high these days?
Yeah, so the all-time high these days meant that SOFR got up to 5.4%, but overall I would characterize the moves that we saw on SOFR going into year end and for the month of December as really just blips in SOFR. That's my technical term for blip versus spike there. Being a shallower move up, and I'll give some context around that comment shortly here. But I would attribute a lot of that, and based on what I've saw from some street side research as well, kind of confirming. And you and I have talked about it in the past around I think when we first started talking about the repo facility back in 2021, but a lot of it tends to happen around for accounting reasons, window dressing kind of to close out more important dates from a record keeping perspective that generally fall around month end or quarter end. But in this case, it was to close out not only a month end year, quarter end, but also the year end of 2023. Which also, I mean, if you think about December of 2023 or December of any year, that's generally a slower period in markets. There's usually a period characterized by lower liquidity just around the holiday season. So going back to December, so for in terms of the range that it moved, it was as low as 5.31% before jumping up to that record high of 5.4%. So that occurred on the second to last trading day of the year. And that amounted to a 9 basis point rise. But indeed, it did put it up to a record high for SOFR at this point. And SOFR, just if I recall correctly, I was looking at it this morning, the New York Fed started publishing that back in April of 2018. But it is backdated beyond that. But in terms of just the official publishing date from the New York Fed is 2018. But when I take a look at SOFR right now, it looks like SOFR at this point is at 5.35%. So it's definitely come back down and thus into the levels that we saw pre that blip. And that's why I'm characterizing it as a blip. And, you know, as I mentioned, these aren't too unusual, especially around month, quarter, and year-end dates, as, you know, really companies are looking to boost cash positions around these reporting dates. So, you know, as you alluded to, what also might be sticking out in Sailor Mermaid's mind beyond just this, you know, potentially him reading this Bloomberg article is the event that we had back in September of 2019, which I would characterize as spikes in overnight rates that we saw both on secured as well as unsecured basis. And for some context there, back in September 2019, in terms of the range, if we went ahead and looked back to see what SOFR did during that period, but SOFR had a one-day spike from a level of 2.43% on September 16th, 2019, all the way up to 5.25% by the next day. And then on the day after, September 18th, SOFR had dropped right back down to 2.5% again. So that, to me, was a pretty significant spike over what we had seen this past the December here. So in looking back, it's a little bit fuzzy. A lot of people, you know, have their, you know, the ideas around what it might have been the catalyst, but it just seems like there's no real agreement and everyone kind of couches it by saying this is a potential spike. So in aggregation of the couching of the potential catalyst there, what I found was that the spike in 2019 really was attributed to a couple factors here. One was to the drawdown in bank reserve balances that are held at the Federal Reserve in connection with the unwinding of the previous session of quantitative easing. I guess that's a long way of saying quantitative tightening that occurred during that period there. But also they had pointed out that given that that date, the November 16th going into the 17th, that also coincided with a period where corporate tax payouts were needed. So there was a need for cash during that period of time that could have also been a contributor to that spike in demand for repo and thus the spike for the overnight rate. Another possible catalyst there was, and as Sailor Mermaid points out here, it could have been the treasury basis trade, which was in vogue at that time as well. And those treasury basis trades can put stress on the repo market since that is used as the primary source of funding when it comes from hedge funds engaged in the basis trade there. So kind of as background here, the basis trade is typically a leveraged one where you are short treasury futures and long the underlying deliverable bonds of that futures contract. And that long position for the cash bonds are funded via the repo market there. So that's where it comes into a levered play that puts additional stress or demand, let's just call it, onto our repo markets there. So in going through this, many of these potential catalysts are currently in play today. You know, perhaps the treasury basis. We're always going to have to pay, unfortunately, corporate both individual as well as corporate taxes. And then also quantitative tightening is, you know, is certainly in play here. So you know, these are the things that people should have on their radars if they're concerned about potential funding stress moving forward. So, you know, I know you took a look at some of the current setup that we're in, Jeff, based on, you know, some of these potential catalysts. Do you want to let us know what you found?
Yeah, I mean, let's look specifically at the last one about quantitative tightening and, bank excess reserves. Also, you know, the reverse repo facility has been sinking pretty steadily here. You know, looking at the current trend line, it looks like we could get to around $400 billion or so by kind of the mid to late February timeframe. And, you know, it's probably not going to go to zero because there's always that need for some overnight liquidity. So even, you know, March sometime when we kind of got to get to where the lows are in the reverse repo facility. And then it'll be interesting to see whether the quantitative tightening, you know, right now the quantitative tightening and the reverse repo have been working kind of against each other, right? So when the bank is reducing their balance sheet and the repo is coming out, it's kind of a net wash. But if there's no more money to come out of the reverse repo, we could see some more problems with the quantitative tightening side of things. And in the Fed meeting minutes that was released on Wednesday, they kind of acknowledged that, when they first started doing quantitative tightening, it was very much on autopilot, let's say, or they were, you know, just going to let it go on in the background. But in the minutes, they did kind of acknowledge that it's an important part of their overall macroeconomic objectives, and that they want to make sure they consider quantitative tightening and the reduction of the balance sheet in the overall scheme of things. Right now it hasn't really been a problem, but really the Fed has said that they want to begin to discuss these things before they have to take action, which makes sense. Again, I like that forward thinking. And the market didn't react kind of like they did in the taper tantrum side, where people start talking, or the Fed starts talking about doing something, and then the market thinks it's imminent. I guess that's what the market did with the Fed rate cuts in the most recent Fed meeting, and they start talking about Fed rate cuts, and all of a sudden the market thinks they're happening tomorrow or happening in the next available meeting. So the market does tend to kind of jump to conclusions that way. But from a quantitative tightening side, they haven't really gotten there yet. But it'll be interesting to see whether they start to slow the decline of the balance sheet, whether they slow the decline, stop the decline of the balance sheet, and what kind of level do they think is going to be sustainable long term for the balance sheet? They know they want to get it down closer to kind of more so-called normal levels, but also that they want to. They don't want to hold treasuries and agency mortgages. They only want to hold treasuries, so they would have to get rid of their agency mortgages. So how does that work, especially given kind of where rates are today? There's very low prepayments. How's that going to affect markets overall also and bank reserves? So I think that it's something that we'll have to start thinking about. I think that, maybe there'll be some more questions in these Jay Powell press conferences about balance sheet unwind, about quantitative tightening, as opposed to kind of the very last question of the Q&A, where Jay Powell just says it's kind of running along as they expect. Maybe there'll be some more technical questions about when they're going to stop the decline or slow the decline down. But I think that to kind of cut to the chase here, you know, because you're going to have that quantitative tightening, reducing the, you know, excess reserves, you know, the reverse repo numbers are coming down. As you said, Sam, corporate taxes are always happening. There's always those funding needs. The basis trade is something that has been talked about a lot recently. You want to keep those arbitrage opportunities to keep things in line. So that makes sense there. But I think that to get back to the end, you know, Sailor Mermaid's last question, do we expect funding pressure this year? I think that just all those inputs into the big system here certainly points to more, you know, blips in the silver rate. I wouldn't say we probably wouldn't see some spikes, but certainly you could see more, you know, 10 basis point blips that are, you know, it's taking a little bit of time there to roll back down to the previous level, but certainly there's that possibility for more, and some things to keep an eye on here for, keep an eye on these, you know, reverse repo, the balance sheet, how the Fed's thinking about things, on whether there's going to be a lot more blips out there.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully, with these tools and kind of the framework of thinking about things, that helps helps answer some of the things that you were wondering about there, Sailor Mermaid. In terms of things that are known that we can keep an eye on in terms of a schedule for next week, we've got it looks like here glancing through, it's pretty much Inflation Week, Jeff. On Thursday, the 11th, we've got the CPI data coming out. On a month-over-month basis, it's expected to rise to a 0.2% for December positive. That's up from 0.10% the prior month there. And that's on the headline. With regards to the core component on the month-over-month, it's expected to match at a 0.2% for the month of December as well. On the headline basis, year-over-year, we've got an expectation of 3.2%. For headline CPI, up from 3.1% the month of November. And on a core basis, it's expected to rise to, or actually, I'm sorry, slow to a 3.8% rate on a year-over-year basis, down from 4% in November. Of course, on Thursday, we'll continue to monitor the initial job and continuing jobless claims there to see if there's any aberration from the current trend line there, as that component of the economy is one area that we are continuing to watch for signs of a potential recession or perhaps even no recession scenario there. So we'll see which way these things continue to trend. And then finally, to wrap it up on Friday, we have the producer price index inflation numbers there. So for a year-over-year basis, it's expected to rise from 0.9 on the headline base on the headline measure to 1.3% in year-over-year in December. And then for the core component, it's expected similarly to CPI to decelerate a bit, coming down from 2% in November down to 1.9% year-over-year basis there. So a little bit of a mixed bag across headline and core, but somewhat consistent across the consumer versus the producer price indices.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether those trends continue that the market has been expecting and that the Fed is expecting, or whether we get some blips and the Fed's higher for longer has got to come back out.
That's right. That's right.
Lastly, I wanted just to remind everyone, Jeffrey Gundlach has his Just Markets webcast on Tuesday at 1:15 Pacific Coast time. So make sure to register for that. And I guess with that, I'd like to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah, I'm definitely registered and going to catch it live on that. That's something I don't want to miss on the live update there from Jeffrey. It's always something to look forward to. So with that, I also want to echo your sentiment, Jeff, and thank everyone for listening to us out there on Minutes. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us if you haven't already. You can send us an email if you want to give us a suggestion for an upcoming episode to cover the topic of the week. You can email us there at minutes@doubleline.com or hit us up on the X at DLine Minutes.
Don't forget our website is doubleline.com, YouTube channel is youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have our new video from our macro asset allocation team titled 24 for 2024. They go through the 24 most pertinent slides that they think heading into this year. Also, we have Jeff Sherman's Bloomberg interview from yesterday already up. So that's a good sign. And make sure to follow Jeff and Sam there at Sherman Show Pod for their podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Hope everyone has a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, DoubleLine Capital.